Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, for another Anatomy of Movie. We're doing Snowman, the Michael Fassbender movie. Stay tuned. We're going to discuss.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Welcome. That's right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We have Dimitri Panos.
Hey, movie fans. Hey, Phil. Welcome back.
That's right. We took
good
a week
off. Good to see you again.
We're back. I'm Phil Svitek. Good to be here. We're doing the Snowman. Lots to discuss. Some good, some not so good, and mostly not so good, unfortunately. But as always, we appreciate you tuning in. We assume that you've seen the movie, so you know it is going to be very spoiler-filled. If you're returning, welcome back. Don't be afraid to share with your friends. Let them know that we're out here. Subscribe so that way you get all the latest episodes. And as always, you can get our rundown in the description box. It's a link to a PDF, so you can follow along. And as we always do, let's start with overall thoughts for this movie.
Absolutely. Again, hello, everybody. And also, we should say, join in on the discussion. Misery sometimes really loves company. And in this case, I think the Snowman just was another example of it ain't easy to adapt a popular novel for the big screen. And this movie to me, this movie was, it was supposed to be this mystery, this Scandinavian noir kind of movie. And Jesus, there was no focus on it. There was very little style. There was no cohesion. There was no suspense. And in the end, there was no mystery for me. This was a whodunit where I figured out whodunit the first quarter of the movie. And then I spent the rest of the three quarters of the movie figuring why they had to done it to me. I mean, I just sat there going, you are the worst detective on the planet. So yes. I felt really bad for a lot of the actors who are stuck in this, because there wasn't anything that these, under normal circumstances, they're very good, some of them Academy Award winning actors, but they couldn't elevate this project. And it was credited, they had three screenwriters on this project. And it was almost as if, this is the way I felt, it was if they took one, they go, okay, you go into cabin A, you write the beginning, you go into cabin B, you write the middle, you go into cabin C, you write the end. You can't communicate with each other. Oh, and here's the book. And done. And then they each come up with a pastiche of a beginning, a middle, and an end. And they said, sounds good, but we're not even going to film all of that. It was just a mess of a movie, which is too bad. The way it was marketed from a trailer standpoint, which we'll talk about more, I was expecting, hoping for like a Girl with the Dragon Tattoo kind of feel to it. But man, oh man, a Shevitz. Boy, this movie made me angry. And it was laughably bad. And we'll talk about Val Kilmer, who wasn't in any of the marketing. And now after watching the movie, I think it was done on purpose. But this was laughably bad. It wasn't like Mother bad, where I was tortured for 2 hours. But I was slack-jawed for most of it, going, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, it really is a shame. There were elements. This is the type of movie that I absolutely enjoy. But this particular one was not. It didn't live up to what I wanted to. You know, from the marketing, I was sort of excited. I didn't know what to expect, and I wanted it to be good. I mean, you know, the biggest shame of it comes down to the fact, like, you know, yes, the story's a mess. They also didn't film, let's say, 20% of it.
Sure.
So that they only had to work with 80% of the actual script. So whatever. So it's kind of a who messed up,
right?
That's what it becomes, rather than a whodunit. and you know, it's a shame. It really is a shame because I don't know. There's plenty of movies that we see, and you know, I have my complaints about, and I complain about them because there's elements that are good there,
right?
And if only certain things were tweaked a little bit, it could have lived up to something far greater.
Absolutely, absolutely. And not only it could have lived up to. But on paper, you're looking at some of the most talented people, like not just in front of the camera, but behind the camera. You have Martin Scorsese as a producer who is one. He was attached to this a long time ago, a while ago. You have a good bunch of his crew working this film. You know, from cinematographer Diambibi to Thelma Schoonermaker, his loved, beloved editor, and as well as Claire Simpson. You know, these are people who've won Academy Awards for working together with Martin Scorsese, and he's producing this. So there is a pedigree. There's an amazing film pedigree here. And then when you look at Michael Fassbender, J.K. Simmons, to talk about, you just wonder what is, like, how did this go so wrong? And how did Universal allow it to go so wrong? You even have a solid director, you know, and granted,
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was good.
Not the fastest paced movie, but as far as a mystery go, like really well constructed. And this movie was like the opposite of everything that movie was. It was the opposite of what Girl with a Dragon Tattoo was. I mean, again, I was just amazed as to how flat this movie was. Like, when was the last time? Did you feel the same way? Like, there was no arcs. It was just really from beginning to end. It was just sort of kind of flat.
Yeah, it was. I mean, absolutely. I felt there was definitely a lot of plot holes, and we'll talk about those. Overall, it just felt like this is the seventh book in the series, and I feel like, to be honest, I don't know how much of the other books they've read, or whether or not they just read this one and said, let's say, adapt it. I love the premise. Like, you have a snowman,
sure.
Basically anywhere. It's when you talk about it and the clown factor. You know, the snowman could have been iconic as a fear,
right?
Feared thing, and it just never lived up to it. It was unfortunate. I felt the. Yeah, I don't love the opening scene because it gave away so much.
It gave away a lot, yet that whole flashback, a lot of it didn't amount to a hell of a lot of anything.
Like,
I mean, if you're going to do that, and then you're going to feature characters that we're following in, let's say, the present, like J.K. Simmons' character, there's got to be a payoff. And, like, I still ask, what the hell was he doing in this movie? Like, what did that character... How did that character move along the plot? He ends up being the smelliest red herring or the stinkiest red herring.
Well, I think that was just to get Oslo to sponsor the Olympics. I think that was that's what that was trying to accomplish, as far as I could tell.
I felt that character had so much more because they were setting up that he was involved in some affair that ruined Rebecca Ferguson's life, her character, Katrina. But it just went nowhere, like absolutely nowhere. And again, it's like you said, when you're only filming 20%, it was like, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, like a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle where about 52 of the pieces are missing. And we're trying to make sense of what I've put together on the table. And it is sad. Because of the pedigree involved, you expect better from them. You hope that it's going to be good. The trailers made it look like a movie I wanted to see. It was just, but I can't recall being so slack-jawed and like, whoa. And we'll talk Val Kilmer later on.
Sure. Have you read it? You know, and I get that this is the character's name, but people are pointing at Harry Hole.
Harry Hole.
And by the way, there's a lot of websites that are talking about how that's the least of its problems, is having a character named Harry Hole.
And listen, I get it. You know, it's interesting because in the research of this, now, again, you brought up something that I found interesting. This is the seventh book in the series. And I know that Joe Nesbo started, again, there was this whole surge, is particularly after that Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series had come out, right? That there was this you know, Swedish or Nordic noir kind of like, there was this kick. People were really liking it. And this is how Joe Nesbo came into play. Actually, for me, The Snowman was the first novel that I had ever heard about here in the States. But what I, the thing I learned too is that Harry Hole, like, he is what Sherlock Holmes is in London. And he in Norway has, like, there's a mini industry around that character.
Which, well, it reminds me of, you know, I don't, you tell me otherwise, but it's no different than like the Clive Cussler books, where it's like,
sure,
you kind of, you know, you can sort of mix and match, and there's not really a through line across all of them necessarily.
Sure.
Too much.
I was comparing it to, I was going to go Jack Reacher, mm-hmm, because they didn't start off with the first novel, you know, when they made that first movie. So that's fine. That's all well and good. But, you know, it's just interesting that he is in Oslo. That character is held in very high regard, that apparently, from what I learned, they actually, like, in London, you can take Sherlock Holmes tours. Well, they actually have, well, I'm going on the Harry Hole tour.
Yeah, not a tour I will be participating anytime soon.
Yeah, it's cold. So that to me is fascinating, and I totally understand why you would acquire the novel to turn into, you know, to adapt. It makes sense to me. And I really think that in the movie business too, I think that we're sorely lacking in this kind of movie where it's an adult suspense thriller mystery. Those used to, like, be so good in the box office, and people would go to them, but they have to be good.
My issue with it is, I just don't understand why they didn't allow the time. It's not like this movie was timely. You know what I mean? It's one thing to be like, okay, we have to get out the next Avengers on this date. Like, mm-hmm, rush it. We got to meet that deadline. This, no, it didn't need a deadline of any sort. It just needed to be completed and good.
Okay, so in my research, like, again, Scorsese was attached. At one point, he was even going to direct. No. Okay. This was like a decade ago. This was a while ago. And at that point, too, it didn't appear that anybody was, like, in any major rush to make the movie. So people got busy and, well, I'm not going to do that movie now. And then all of a sudden it was like a hurry up and wait kind of a feel. And then all of a sudden it was like, we need to get this now. It's like, but you had so many years to work on this, get it right. And then all of a sudden it became a rush, like, to get this out. So it was almost as if, like, the rights were going to be up, and they had some, whether it be an imaginary deadline or they had to fulfill something by a certain time to get this movie out, so that they either didn't pay a penalty, because obviously this movie felt very rushed, even though it's been in production for the better part of almost a decade.
They might have been better off paying the penalty. And,
right?
You know, sometimes you take that loss.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a who messed up type of mystery.
Yeah.
That's what it really becomes, unfortunately. All right. Well, let's break down the story. Let's start there.
Okay.
You know, let's talk about the opening scene, because it sets up so many things and yet doesn't. Very haunting. And I thought, based off that opening scene, I kind of did wonder. I was like, okay, this is going to be good. What are we in for?
I felt the same way. I was like, okay, because I hadn't read the book. So I don't, you know, again, as an adaptation goes, I'm not sure what was in the exact story or whatever. But you're right. The first 10 minutes of this movie, there was something going on. And you know that it's going to relate later on down the line. And, you know, being that this is a whodunit. And it was set up pretty hauntingly. I think you had the right thing, particularly the actress that played the mom. Mm-hmm. Like, that to me, her vacant stare as her car is on the ice sinking down, that was very haunting. You know, and then having the kid watch this happen. You know, and then the whole thing with the cop and like, what's going on here, when he was testing the kid in the house, and he was getting the wrong answers or not coming up with the answers fast enough, and he would just slap the woman. Again, it was disturbing, it was haunting, and I was like, okay, this is the kind of mystery we're going in for, sort of like Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, which was disturbing at certain scenes and uncomfortable, but it had a good mystery behind it, and I felt we're on the right track.
Yeah. And then, you know, from there, it's sort of, you know, we delineated it, which was fine. We meet Harry Hole and things like that, and, like, I would say for the first, really the first sort of act of it wasn't too bad. It kind of set things up fairly well, and that's because partly also we didn't really meet J.K. Simmons' character. Like, once we started introducing all these subplots, that's when things start to fizzle out.
Absolutely.
But the more contained it actually was, I felt that was its strength, if there was one.
Well, and to your point, too, when we first meet Harry Hole, as played by Michael Fassbender, I was like, okay, I buy it. I buy him. You know, he's a tortured soul. You know, he's obviously he has a different personality. You know, and he's obviously an addict, or he's an alcoholic at the very least. They're setting this up, and you know, I was, again, from that opening 10 minutes to this setup, I was like, I was into the movie. I was like, this is a good kind of a detective story. They were setting things up right for a bit. And all his idiosyncrasies, whether it, you know, his family life is for shit, you know, he's just on a bender. But I learned things in my research that were never explored. Like, we never went beyond the caricature of the Harry Hole character. We never realized why he was so despondent, why he had this personality, and why, like, I found out through research that apparently because he was drunk, because he's an alcoholic, and maybe you saw this too, in earlier adventures, he was in a car accident that actually killed his partner.
I did not get that.
Yeah, well, and he was in a car accident. He was drunk driving. He was in an accident. It killed his partner. And the police force sort of kind of covered it up. They knew. They sort of kind of covered it up. So he's an alcoholic who's living with the guilt of, he knows that he was responsible for the death of this police officer. And he knew that it was drunkenness and his drunk driving that did that. That's a character building thing that had I known in the movie in one way, shape, or form. That,
well, they did set it up a little bit, where the, I forget what his name was, but he basically said to him at the beginning, I can't keep covering up for you. Write the note that,
right,
you know, and I'll pass it, I'll backdate it, but you gotta work.
Yeah, you were visiting your uncle, yeah. You know, I'll go with that, or your uncle passed away, but just him saying, you know, we can't keep covering for you. I don't know, covering a death of a fellow police officer is a pretty big deal to me. And these are just the kind of things that, seeing the character where he is now in this tale, that would have been nice a little bit. It could have been a line.
Well, yeah, something. I mean, I think it's one of those things, especially, it could have been revealed as it went throughout. And it definitely could have tied in, you know, because otherwise, like, here's my interpretation of it. He just had seen so many cases that he was the best. Now, sort of, he was, you know, like, when anyone's career, after a certain point, they start to be like, okay, well, where is this going? Am I still the best? And especially, like, in his line of work, when he sees these sick, demented serial killers, and that's what he's staring at every single day, yeah, it messes with your soul.
Understood.
And so when you have no other deeper level to tie that in with, that's, you know, that's a cliche interpretation, and there was nothing in the movie to prove otherwise.
Yeah, and Thomas Alfredson, the director, he's so in all of my research and everything that I've read about him in interviews and everything he said, he so wanted to stay away from the cliche of the flawed policeman solving a crime. It didn't quite work, you know, and he is a flawed policeman, but it would have been what made him so flawed. Like, you can guess that. That's, you know, he becomes disenfranchised from it all. He's become dead inside. It's the Rick Decker, you know. He's seeing this. You can understand the psychological effect that it could have on him and how it ruined his family life. And he just ends up not being a nice man. So my other biggest problem too with the character was he seemed like a smart guy. Like, the movie had him asking all, from an audience perspective, he seemed to be asking all the smart questions, yet this is a guy who did so little detecting. He was asking questions, but he never got answers, and he never detected anything, and he couldn't see clues, even if the clues were sitting right next to him. And I shouldn't be smarter than the character on screen. Like, there's mysteries that you've seen, I'm sure, that our audience have seen, that the movie is good, so good that we'll either figure things out like a minute or two before, which makes sense, because I think mysteries can be hard to translate or to even create on screen, because those characters are bound by that world and that script. We as an audience, we have a sort of kind of a luxury in trying to piece things together. And we can sort of maybe think ahead. It's almost like playing chess. So if I figure something out a minute or two before our detective or our main character is, I'm okay with it. Sometimes if a movie's very smart and done well, I'll figure it out at either the same time or, like, I'll just go, oh my God. And if a movie's smart, they usually will hold something back, right? So that we don't know either. But this movie didn't have it.
No.
And I don't know about you, but I figured out who the bad guy was literally a quarter of the way through. And that shouldn't have been so obvious. To me.
I did know where it was heading. But I was just slightly confused as to all the other subplots. So I, you know, as I was watching it, I was just more confused rather than like, wait, I know the, so I didn't like hold high regard to knowing that information. I was still trying to participate in the movie of like, well, why this then?
Yeah. A lot of it was like they just red herrings that were left out in the California heat wave of 110 degrees for a week. Cause they all amounted to nothing and they all stunk. And then when that scene on the train, When he's going to Bergen.
Good old Bergen.
He's going to Bergen. He gets onto the train, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, on this very crowded platform, in his car that he's in, comes the man who's dating his wife, who's a doctor, you know, and the clues have been, I'm watching you. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you all the clues. And as soon as he came on the train, I'm like going, that is one hell of a coincidence that not only that he's at that train, that he's on the same train, but he found him in the car that he was sitting at. And I'm like going, Jesus Christ, he's the bad guy. He's the snowman serial killer. And so everything after that, I was like, well, there's no point in that. It's not him. This is too much of a coincidence. There's just too many people. And if our villain says, I'm watching you, and there's proof that he's being watched, how does he just find him out of that stack of people? I have no idea. The movie was rough. how did you catch the awful dub? Yeah, we're going to get to the dubbed Val Kilmer thing, I'm sure. Yes. But, I mean, did you figure it out then? And then everything just became superfluous and not necessary.
I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but he looked so much like the kid that it was just... that's what made it.
How you pieced it together.
That's what it was. It was so right. simple in terms of look.
Right.
It just literally stared you in the face, because I was like, wait, oh, they had this whole scene and with the kids, so it must tie in.
Yeah.
And that's what did it for me. I don't know if it would have worked better if Harry found him on the train and was like, hey, what are you doing here? And he said the same thing that he did of like, oh, I'm going to the conference.
Right.
Rather than, you know, him actively, because Harry is supposed to be the one who's active versus him.
Right.
Who's, in theory, supposed to be passive.
Sure.
Yeah. And what was that? That was, 40, 50 minutes into the movie?
Yeah, it definitely was in, I felt like the first quarter. It was definitely maybe going into your second act, but it was definitely after the 20-minute mark. It was fairly early on that he walks into the train. That was the problem, because,
with the opening scene, they were so jumbled together.
Yes.
You got to give, because for me, that's what did it.
Right.
And so if you maybe spaced it out a little bit further, I wouldn't have caught it so easily.
Right.
I don't know. But
and then, of course, all right, so we have the first scene, right? And then we talk about the other patchwork, because now we're going back to Bergen. Now, then we have the scenes with J.K. Simmons and his character. And he's had an affair, and this snowman killer seems to have been 10 years ago as well. And who is it? And then we're introduced to another completely different detective who seems to be, he's similar. He parallels Harry Hole. The Val Kilmer, detective. And I'm wondering, oh, so this is an old case. So we're going to study the old case, but that amounted to really a whole hell of a lot of nothing. Like, were they setting it up that J.K. Simmons was the bad? But I already know who the bad guy is. And to your point, he didn't seem that old, where if it were 10 years ago, he probably would have been in his 20s or something.
As far as Val Kilmer was concerned, they just used him in such a, it wasn't like shock factor, but it was like, what are you doing? You know, he's climbing roofs. He's just being nonchalant. And you already have one detective that's, quote,
right.
The loner, the rebel.
Right.
Why do we need two? And because he almost upped the ante as far as Harry was concerned. It was and for what purpose? It's not like he was a genius at what he did. You know, there's certain people that are very eccentric, but they're good at what they do.
Right. Well, Gert Rafto, though, I think he was being set up to be the, you know, he was, in a sense, the Harry Hole of his time. You know, he's very eccentric. He had his drinking problems. But here's the thing, too, with Val Kilmer. Number one, he wasn't in any of the marketing, right? So he wasn't in the trailers. He wasn't in a poster. And when the opening credits pop up and I saw his name, I was like, oh, I didn't know he was in this movie. And then when that character of Gert Rafto shows up, I still didn't know that Val Kilmer was in the movie. He was so unrecognizable to me.
That hair was god awful.
Everything was god awful. I had to go to the person next to me, and I saw this at a screening at the end. I started a screening and went to the person next to me. I was like, that's Val Kilmer. I was like, oh. And then he opened his mouth. And then I was like going, I still didn't know it was Val Kilmer. And again, I think it's one of those situations where I actually felt, number one, I had no idea what the hell was going on with that character. And then with the bad dubbing, which was like 60s Godzilla, B science fiction dubbing. In today's technology, it should have been a little bit more seamless to me. But I was like, why the hell are they? Because I knew nothing. I didn't even know he was in the movie. It was only after I had to look it up. After I found out what it was, I just felt so bad for Val Kilmer, because as you probably found out, he had had throat surgery, he had throat cancer. And they had filmed not too long after his surgery. His tongue had swollen, and he couldn't enunciate properly. And I figure at this point, from a production standpoint, you've done productions, Phil. Like, you have one of two options. You either wait for him, you film everything else, and you wait for him to properly heal so that he can give his performance. Or you hire another actor and said, we can't use you. But the option they choose was so...
Or dumb down his dialogue.
Well, which they tried to do, because he didn't talk all that much. They tried to film him from behind.
But even the stuff he said, like, he didn't need to talk at all. I don't even remember what half the crap he said. It was useless jibber-jabber. Like, I did, like, where are you going? He just gives him the finger.
Right.
Just to have him do that.
You know, it just, whatever decision, and they chose from a technology standpoint. I mean, we're grafting digitally people's heads on other people's bodies and stuff. Not to great effect, but far better than this dub job that they did. And after I learned all of this, I felt, what a horrible disrespect to Val Kilmer. It's a very big disservice to him, because no good can come of it. And it's not because of his performance. He was handicapped. Like, and you allowed that. You allowed him to do this, and they made him look bad.
Yeah.
And I felt real, after reading everything, I felt bad, because no good could come. Like, it was, the dub job was so, it was laughably horrible. It took me out of the movie.
Oh, it took it. It's a big point of contention. It took everyone out of the movie, and especially, I mean, for in a movie like this, given what it was, it might have been a breath of fresh air, because at least to give you something else to focus on besides the, you know, the right spots that was left on screen.
Yeah, I agree.
Unfortunately,
and Howell's Hollywood Reviews agrees with us, but you really felt, I felt bad for him afterwards. Because I really think that they did him as an actor a disservice. I'm not saying that Val Kilmer has been in some of the, you know, recently some great movies. But, you know, right now I'll go back as, like, Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. He was amazing in that movie. And I felt that it was a good maybe comeback for him. But this movie, I know that he wanted to work with the director. And again, on paper, this looked like a really great project to be a part of. But man, they just did him wrong, and it's too bad. It was sad. It was laughing, because you're laughing, and then you find out why, and it's like, you should have given him, you should have done something other than what you did. Let him heal, film everything else, and then make it right, because that character could have been interesting. But again, the way that it was filmed, I still wonder, what the hell is that character doing in the movie to begin with?
So, well, speaking of things that aren't in the movie, for whatever reason, I'd be curious to get your take on this, but they took great care in removing all Norwegian language from the movie, whether it was newspapers, whether it was signs, anything of that nature, so that way it was changed to English. Which I just didn't understand why.
Well, when you look at the... Okay, we've talked a lot about this... casting amongst people who are like Ghost in the Shell, mm-hmm. The Great Wall. Is that what it was?
You know, Great Wall, yeah.
Yeah. Remember, there was all this controversy about how do they cast Matt Damon? How do they cast Scarlett Johansson? Nobody said anything about this movie. And outside of Ferguson, there was like nothing in there that made this movie look so special and spectacular. And again, my closest comparison is Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, either the television versions that were made or the David Fincher version. At least they had some Sweden, some Nordic people in that movie, and I felt as if I were somewhere else. This was almost like they just filmed a set, but they filmed on location. They filmed in Oslo. which was surprising to me. But it would have been nice to have more Oslo flavor to this. No. I would have liked to have felt, because sometimes I'm not a traveling person, but if I see these movies, it's almost like a travel log. I can almost get a sense of what this is like, so to speak. But, you know, when everything's in English, I just feel...
And on purpose, you know, I get it. The card could have been in English or something. Like, that's fine. I just don't understand the meticulous nature of it. Because it did take me, you know, they don't outright say that they're in Norway until later on.
True.
And so I didn't really have much context going into it. So I was like, okay, is this Sweden? No, maybe Denmark.
It could have been Canada.
Could have been.
Right? I mean, it felt like it could have been Canada. But then I read, right, they did film a ton over there.
Yeah. No, they pretty much the whole movie.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say whole movie because 20% of it's missing. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, this is actually the hardest movie to dissect because, you know, when you talk about, like, Atomic Blonde and it had its mysteries and it was kind of like a whodunit, at least it was done purposeful and we could sort of talk about it. Yeah. This, I just feel, because there's so many dead ends, every time I try to go down a certain path, it's like, all right, well, that, I don't know. It's the hardest movie for me to actually talk about.
Well, I always find that sometimes when you don't like a movie, because you can trash and trash and trash a movie, sometimes I find that they're the hardest to discuss because there has to be a good reasoning behind it. And for a movie like The Snowman, you can only compare it to other kinds of mysteries. And I was thinking, it made me think about mysteries a lot. And I was trying to think, how many mysteries are there that aren't based off of something else? Where it truly is like a mystery. One movie that came up was like Basic Instinct. Mm-hmm. That's a mystery that wasn't based off of a novel or a graphic novel. There was one other one that I was thinking of that's like a true mystery. But we have Murder on the Orient Express.
It's coming out soon.
Which is coming out in a few weeks. Fingers which I crossed. Can't wait for. And I've seen the 70s. It's such a lavish, beautiful movie. It's all about how it's done. Like even a movie like The Maltese Falcon, even some of the great mysteries. Chinatown, I don't think was a book. That's the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't Chinatown. Think it was a book.
What an amazing cinematic mystery that movie is. When you even look at things like The Big Sleep, right? Raymond Chandler, who contributed to the screenplay, he didn't even know what the hell was going on when he was writing it. Like, because that movie, when you talk about dead ends and not making sense, but the movie is so classy and beautiful to look at. It's a great classic mystery. And I just think that it's lacking at our time because we, as an adult, it's great to have these kind of adult movies. I was a big fan of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the David Fincher version. And I know it didn't set any box office records. I was hoping for this in The Snowman. But it must just really be hard. And if the studio isn't going to give you the backing or if they're rushing you and you have to chop out 20% of the screenplay that you already have, and this movie still clocks in at 2 hours.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that had they filmed the entire like screenplay? Well, what are we talking? 2.5 to 3 hour movie?
I mean, maybe. I mean, at that point, you know, as you start to see it, then you are able to more figure out, okay, what don't we actually need?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and some of the scenes that were left in, that there's probably a lot of scenes that could have been taken out, but due to just them wanting that runtime, you know, you're not gonna make a like it would have felt weird to have an hour and a half.
Sure, that's, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, I think they just went with what they had, and I'm like, okay, we'll play this out to the full extent that we can.
Sure. Yeah, and yeah, they did that.
I mean, from a scene by scene perspective, like it, you know, it does work. Like, I remember when at first he's following the woman, you know, because she's got the child right at the beginning. Like, that's a beautifully shot sequence. It's mm-hmm. it's well acted. It's suspenseful. So, like, as a standalone bit, mm-hmm. it works. It just doesn't work for the greater whole.
Right.
That's the problem.
And well, what about Chloe Zwingli thing? Mm-hmm. Like, again, like. Huh? wait, like she she gets killed and then, oh, I'm her twin sister. Okay. It's like, what do we hear? What? Okay. She was pregnant and like, it didn't, these things don't match up with what our serial killer is. And it was like, from what I understand too, in the book, it was like every first snow, this would happen. Yeah. You know, it snows a lot in Norway. So it just seemed that there was, he wasn't waiting for first snow. He was just waiting for it to snow. And I just, you just don't, it was hard to figure out what's exactly going on. And those are the biggest problems.
So, okay, yeah, well, we haven't talked about like the motive of
right
the killer. So how would you summarize his motives? Because it was, unlike just a standard serial killer, it almost seemed like a, on the scale of film noir, like a Bond villain. Because there was, I don't know, maybe it was because there was like all this abortion talk brought into it. Like, it's, there just seems so much.
But a Bond villain, at least, as outlandish as a certain Bond villains can be, at least there's a method to the matter. There's a purpose. Over here, the only purpose that I could figure out is, okay, let's go back to that, the opening scene of the movie.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because I was confused.
Was that cop the father, or yes, was he a father figure?
No, he was a father.
He was the kid's
father.
Yet, that cop was married to somebody else. So, yeah, he had this affair, which brought up this bastard child. They were out in the sticks, not to be seen or heard from anybody, because heaven forbid the skin will get out, I guess. And being that did you get that the kid knew that this cop was his father?
Yeah, because he
or was
them.
He a father figure? Like, that's what I couldn't figure out.
No, he figured it out then, because, I mean, between the sex scene and her yelling, like, he figured it out.
And that granted, he was actually his son.
Yeah, to be like, for any like avoidance of doubt, maybe he didn't figure out right away, but I'm sure by the time he hit like 15, 16, 17, he was like, oh, okay, I know what happened.
Because he seemed to be targeting women who weren't going out. They were single parents, mm-hmm, number one, and they were either a floozy, like Chloe Zwingli's character, I gather, didn't even know exactly who the father was. She was just, you know, she was sleeping with whatever. She got pregnant, and she was going to have this child. The woman at the beginning who had the daughter didn't have a good relationship with the father, so it was almost like he was picking these women who weren't encouraging relationships of this. They were single parents. Women, single parents, who weren't encouraging relationships with the father is the best that I could come up with.
Which doesn't make sense, because it wasn't necessarily the mom's fault.
No.
And as to why she, like, chose to kill herself, I'm baffled by that choice, too.
Well, yeah, I couldn't figure out. Yeah, I couldn't figure that out either, as to what was going on. You're talking about the mother at the beginning while she drowned herself. And then apparently the cop was in the car, saw it happen too.
Yeah, that's a flashback we get later on. And just the fact that... So here's the thing. I'm just torn, because it's not like... yes, the mom didn't really do him much help, but neither did the dad. And so if you're going to pick...
I'd be more pissed at the dad for leaving
or
being the cause of, you caused my mom to kill herself. Like, why isn't he killing men?
And that's why, like, it would have made, because then Harry is kind of not in his kid's life.
Right.
So then that would have sort of played into it a little bit better. I don't, you know.
But in the end, he was targeting Harry, obviously, for that reason, too. Like, because he wasn't taking care of his son, and he was targeting that mother who, you know, he was targeting that woman because she was Harry's wife and kid, but Harry's not a good father, and Oh, who knows?
It just seems convoluted.
It was hell. Yeah, it was.
Because if you're going to target Harry, then just target Harry. Don't target the women first just to get to Harry. You've proven you can get to Harry pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And he studied Harry. Like, he knew, like, he found him sleeping on a bench. You know, I mean, his clues should have been, like, again, his clues were enough that he had to, you know, he had to figure things out. You know, I just, it was very, it was, I don't know, it was tough. It was, and again, it's just one of those things when it all came through in the wash, I was like, whatever, okay. It doesn't make sense to me, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, I had somebody, as soon as the movie ended, there were a couple of people who were walking, they're like, do you understand what happened? I was like, trying to explain that, but I didn't want to be, A, I didn't want to seem dumb, so mm-hmm. I tried to give an answer. B, I didn't want to seem like the answer I had was dumb.
Yeah, and then they set up that his ex-wife, Raquel, mm-hmm. Played great. I mean, Charlotte Gainsbourg was really good in the role, but she's with this guy, but you can tell she still loves Harry. And then there comes a point in the movie that it just almost comes out of nowhere where she seduces him in his hole of an apartment or whatever it was. Like, and I'm like, and then I was really like, what the hell is going on here? Like, and it was like this sexless sex scene that led to, again, it led to nothing. None of the actions that took place in this movie really led to anything. Other than it took up screen time.
Well, and that's it could have worked. Maybe like it could have signaled that there's a problem with her actual relationship with her stepfather. But it just unfortunately falls flat.
Yeah, and they weren't married. The killer, like it wasn't like they were really married at all. And it just, it was, again, it was just such a pish-posh, like, stitching together with like, you know, a jigsaw, trying to put things together. It was very, very difficult. And even, again, going to the J.K. Simmons character, they put all these people in there, and then J.K. Simmons taking photos of people, you know, the women particularly, that, too... It's like, oh, this is going to lead to something. But it didn't. He was just a perv. And in light of what's going on, not that universal. Not that anybody knew what's going on, but that those scenes were sort of uncomfortable in light of current events.
Yeah.
Like what he was doing. But it led to nothing. He neither was reprimanded for his actions or anything at all.
And a sick twist, here's the thing, like, you know, movies like this, I'm not condoning this by any means, but movies like this, like, there is a side to it that is haunting because they do try to tell, like, the darker side of the truth. And sometimes, you know, through the voice of the movie, the truth can be, like, guys like this do get away. But that never really became a point. It just was kind of dropped as opposed to, like, you know, because to complete that thought and that idea... You kind of have to have him actually get away with it rather than just leave the storyline where it left off.
But then you're trying to figure out, too, what he's doing with the whole Rebecca Ferguson character. Like, this guy cheated. This goes back to the Val Kilmer cop thing because Val Kilmer was looking into the shenanigans going on between Rebecca Katrine's mom... who had the affair with J.K. Simmons, but he was about to be found out. So was J.K. Simmons the original snowman killer? And that Val Kilmer's character found out who it was, and then he gets his head blown off. And, like, it just led to nothing. Like, we didn't find anything out about that and how it related to the story here. And was our guy, our current guy, a copycat? Like,
no. I'd be curious to know the actual writing process because You know how it's the cliche thing, whether cops or detectives, they mm-hmm. have like the little headshots and they have the strings to connect. I felt like for this movie, it could have actually benefited for the writers to have created something like that. And I don't know if they did
like
or
a
did
chalkboard it. Or something. Yeah.
So you actually know how things are connected, because right now the pathways, they're just too convoluted and confusing.
You know, and Rebecca Ferguson too, who you know, she's a good actress. I really like her. She's attractive. She's got good chops. She's a talented woman. She's a nice breath of fresh air in the right, you know, in the right role. And in this movie, number one, I didn't find that there was any chemistry at all between Harry and Katrine. And I just felt that she was, obviously she looked up to Harry Hole, right? She looked up to him as a detective. She wanted to sort of follow in his footsteps, but she had her own agenda, and that agenda was never made very, very clear. Like, it wasn't so much as like this snowman thing. She had this thing against J.K. Simmons' character. And she wanted to approach him. She wanted to confront him, but we don't exactly, outside of maybe she figured out that he's the one that had an affair on her mom. None of these threads that were laid in this mystery were ever explained. And so you just end up not really caring, and it just left the actors and actresses like Rebecca Ferguson floundering. Like it would have been nice, again, had there been some semblance of tension, whether it be like a sexual, like an attraction between these two characters, mm-hmm. that would make it like Harry and his wife. It makes that triangle give something to there, but I didn't see it at all. Did you? I mean. Did I miss it? I mean,
I don't know.
And it's not like that character wasn't an attractive character where that could work. And you could see how she and Harry could connect because of their intellect. And they each have their little quirks. Yeah. But I don't know. It was an uncomfortable.
Right, I'm gonna move us along, only because the more I talk about it, the more I get disappointed and frustrated. So, let's talk about the promotion for this movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I wanted to maybe to. Well, we can. We'll go into promotion. But I wanted to talk too, though. I mean, the snowman. I mean, the filming on this began more or less in 2014, mm-hmm. when they were in Norway, and they had to explore like a lot of Norway. But it was always important for Alfredson to shoot in Oslo, and I get that. I get how they wanted the museums, the architecture, and trying to get that palette down. But I wish they had kept it Oslo and not make it look like an American kind of city. But I appreciate that when they came to the city hall and they had these carvings in the buildings, and that's what they tried to go for, you know, in this movie. In the production designer, Maria Jerkovic, the snow landscapes were devoid of any color. That was another thing too. It was very devoid. It was almost monochromatic,
which I liked the look. I did,
but it had this palette like throughout the entire movie, which again with the tone of the movie, nothing changed. And again, I keep on going back to when I look at Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. Fincher would put like a blueness to it. Like, it looked foreign. It looked cold. So when Daniel Craig is freezing in his little cabin, you know, you got that sense, because there was a sense of style. But the way they shot this, it didn't really leave them that much style to it. There's no primary colors. And I get it. I get if you want to be like this. But it was that way the whole entire movie. And I didn't feel like I was visiting. I didn't feel like I wanted to be at a place that I would visit. that I would want to visit, as rich in its history that it could potentially be, you know.
So. I didn't mind. I actually appreciated the look, and I out of all things that maybe it's just there were so many other problems that was the least of it. But I don't know. For me, that was a takeaway that I actually enjoyed.
Yeah, and you know, the police headquarters was purposely done. It was purposely designed so that it could be like the polar opposite of Harry, because if you got it, it almost felt like police via Google office, mm-hmm. like it was all open space. And you know, you have a man like Harry who, like, he wanted his privacy. He did whatever he could, and then to hear that Katrine gets his office. But I thought that was interesting. You know, it was a little bit different of Harry's personality. The other thing too was snow. They so wanted to not use fake snow that they actually hired a snow supervisor. That's a job title. If you like snow and you know your snow, Johann Harsnick, and it was his task to ensure that Alfredson had real snow wherever they filmed, whether it was in a studio or outside. And so the film shot in Norway during most of winter. But as we know with seasons, winter bears itself to spring. So they had to move. Actually, they moved into studio work. And so catch this. They had rented a refrigerated warehouse. Okay. And this allowed them to shoot the studio scenes and enable Alfredson to work with real snow. This is how far they went. They actually brought in real snow, froze the studio down to -5 to keep the snow intact and the breath visible. Mm-hmm. But what happens? You're from New England. What happens when you pack snow and you freeze it? It becomes packed. So they actually had to have people like aerate the snow using tractors and forks mm-hmm. to like make it puffy. But I found that to be very fascinating that they were so, I mean, I figure with today's effects, they didn't go digital. They actually went for the real thing.
I mean, so. Yeah. And I appreciate that. I'll say it this way. I appreciate that more when the movie is better.
Sure.
You know, because right now it just seems like, okay, we did that in sacrifice of something else.
Well, you know, and I get that. I am doing my best to try to make it positive and to show, you know, listen, the one thing we always talk about too is the creative process. And even if we dislike a movie, we always try to focus on something where somebody worked hard. Like, again, I always say this. Nobody sets out to make a bad movie on purpose. They just happen. As proven, this movie had a lot of great talent front behind the camera. Some of these people's work is going to get marred in this because it's a bad movie. So, you know, I am trying to be positive.
No, I agree with you. I'm just,
But you're right. Had this been a really good movie, you would have said, oh my God, part of what made this is a good movie is that, wow, this is real snow. No. Here's a little bit of trivia that The Snowman became the first international feature shot in Norway to receive funding from the new state incentive programs designed to attract foreign film and television productions. The Snowman to this day is still the biggest film to date to have been shot in Norway. And then it was a 12-week shoot. So, and they did. They filmed all over Oslo. The other thing, the cabin, the Rafto's cabin on the windswept, like his... Like, apparently that was, it's a legitimate cabin. Like, that wasn't a set or a prop. It belonged to an elderly woman, and it was spotted by Alfredson during a location scout. And it looked like the art department, to his quote is, he said, it looked like the art department put it there for me to find. Mm-hmm. And But it was incredibly, outside of it being incredibly cinematic, it was incredibly difficult, and it was so remote that they had a hard time. It wasn't accessible by car. They could only go via helicopter. And then via helicopter, it was still hard to find a place to land. And then finding ways to have all the equipment.
Because you got a helicopter there.
Right. Because you get a helicopter it in. So, you know, and that did look remote. I'll give them that.
You know? I mean, apart from them Americanizing the locations, like, I actually did like the locations. I just didn't know that it was Norway necessarily, but it did look good.
Yeah, it did. Absolutely.
So I will applaud for that.
Yeah. Certainly. So I wanted to, I wanted to talk about and give some of the props to the location into Norway. And,
And I do hope, I would like a movie in Norway, whether it be a noir or something else. I don't, let's see it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
As far as, this kind of ties promotion and editing, but many of the scenes from the trailer, whether it be the explosion, the bear trap, and a couple of letters, were not shown in the final cut.
No.
As to why, I'm not entirely positive.
You know, it's... I'm glad you brought up trailer, because there was an article written. It's in today's Boston Globe. It's written by their film guy, Ty Burr. And he basically, his stance is, trailers are lies, and I don't want to see them. I'll never watch trailers again. They're lies. All trailers are lies. I felt that his stance is a little bit harsh. I don't think that they're all lies. I think that there are trailers that cheat. This movie, Mother, is a great example of the cheat. Mm-hmm. Why we didn't see scenes as portrayed in the trailer, that I have no idea why. I mean, because the trailer did make this movie look good. I don't say that this trailer was a lie, because it did say that the movie's a mystery.
No.
I mean, so I knew that. So I knew going in I was going to hopefully see a suspense mystery. And the movie is a mystery. But why they used these alternate takes, it's almost as if they had filmed other stuff and they just cut it out too. Well,
we're going to shoot the trailer version?
Yeah, I mean, what they showcased in this trailer, tell me if you agree with me on this, seemed far more interesting than what ended up on the big screen.
Oh, this was a movie. I knew it was a smaller movie, and I kept looking out for when it was going to come out because I was excited to see it.
Me
and,
too.
I really did want to see it. And then, we were debating on which movie to see, and you're like, well, it's a toss-up of which crappy movie you want to see. And I was like, no, but it's The Snowman. We're going to see The Snowman.
It's yeah, be a good movie. Between this or Medea, I think.
And so. One other one. There's Geostorm.
Oh, Geostorm.
Got to give Geostorm credit, too.
Yeah, yeah. I might have had more fun in Geostorm, because at least that you really know what you're getting into.
I guess, but it's, especially now, it just hits too close.
And
to home.
Yeah, but this movie. Okay, let me ask you this: would you say were you sold a bill of goods that just didn't deliver? Like, I don't think the trailer was a lie.
Yeah, I don't think it was a lie. It's tough. There's plenty of other trailers that I see that I'm like equally excited, and the movie just doesn't live up to it.
Right.
So it's not that I would look at the trailer as a lie of anything. It's just the movie just wasn't good.
You're right.
As simple as that.
And I tweeted out that article. So if you support me on Twitter at dmovies1701, you'll find that article that I'm referring to. But I also said that I don't agree that all trailers are lies. There are, you know, a trailer is a marketing tool. Okay. It's meant to garner interest and excitement in a trailer. Now, look, when you have a movie like a Star Wars movie, what else are you going to garner? Like, you'd really have to have crap material to work with. But really, all you have to do is just have Star Wars The Last Jedi. And people are going to applaud that. But when you look at movies like It, right? That trailer did that movie an amazing service. And I think that the trailer and the marketing helped that movie become the hit that it is. even movies like Get Out had a really good trailer and happened to be a really good movie, but the trailer was not a lie. A trailer shouldn't tell you everything that's happening in the movie, but it should excite you enough. Wonder Woman's another good example where it really, that trailer did, in a way, set itself apart from other DC movies. The Dunkirk trailer. Like, where was the lie in the Dunkirk trailer? Because that was a fantastic trailer, too, right? So, yes, I do admit that trailers like The Snowman, not really a cheat. They were just showing different scenes that seemed far more interesting. A movie like Mother, that trailer's a lie. I mean, that trailer is a cheat because that does sell a bill of goods and tells you this movie's going to be this when it ends up being that. And being I worked with trailers for most of my career, whether it be for Universal Pictures or Lionsgate, I've seen cheated trailers before. I mean, when a studio doesn't know what to do with a movie, it's not that good, you cheat the trailer to at least try to spark some semblance of interest, right? But then you have trailers like, I don't know how you feel about Justice League trailer, but I don't think that movie, I don't think those trailers are lying. I think the movie's, it makes the movie look god awful. You have to, if you go to the movies a lot, you can sort of kind of see when a trailer's trying to hide something. But Thor Ragnarok, great use of music, shows you who's in it, doesn't give you away the entire movie or plot, doesn't give away twists. It's a good trailer, and I don't think it's a lie. And like I said, Conjuring or Annabelle Creation, that was a really good trailer too, you know. And it didn't lie. I mean, the movie.
You got a horror movie.
You got a really good horror movie, and the trailer. Like, there have been times where a trailer is better than a movie. We talk about comedies all the time. We can sort of sniff out when they put all the funny stuff in a comedic trailer.
Sometimes, but even that's where, with comedies in particular, are the hardest ones, because there's times where there's been plenty of comedies that we've seen that trailer-wise, it's like, that's not that good, but the movie ends up being good, and then, you know, other times, like, the trailer looks so amazing, but the movie doesn't necessarily...
All the funny stuff is in the trailer. So, you know, again, a trailer is a marketing tool. And I don't think that they all lie. I don't take that stance. I will always watch trailers. Trailers have been good to me. So I'll always watch them. It's just after working with trailers and trying to get them up and jockey for position on screen, you can sort of kind of see, you can sort of sniff out where the lie is or what they're trying to hide. But I think for the most part, a good trailer should get you interest. And sometimes in a movie that you might not have had any interest to see to begin with. You know, like Gifted. Gifted was a good trailer, right? And that's a small little movie, but you see that trailer and you go, oh, it's a good trailer. It didn't lie. One of my favorite movies of the year. So
not this year, but yes, of that year.
Yeah, of that year.
2015, I believe.
But Gifted was in 2015 with Chris Evans.
Oh, Gifted.
Gifted. I wasn't. Oh, you're thinking of The Gift with Joel. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Gifted.
I'm sorry.
Yes, Gifted was good. Yeah. The Gift is also good.
Yeah, it's really good too. Why marketing? I felt they cut a good trailer. I did feel sort of kind of cheated that scenes in the trailer weren't in this movie because they seemed to be more interesting when I walked out. But the outdoor campaign for this movie, though, sucked. Sucked. I talked about this on Meet the Movie Press. The biggest problem, you've probably seen them too, the big billboards of the bus, the bus shelter ads. Mr. Police Officer, I've given you all the clues, blah, blah, blah. You know, don't give me a billboard ad that I have to read while I'm driving. Like, texting is a big enough problem in this city that I don't need to, just, you have a talented, half decent looking cast. Like, graphic, do a snowman with, I don't know, but don't make me read a billboard as I'm trying to drive down Burbank Boulevard or 405 or any freeway. for that matter. I thought the outdoor campaign was horrible. Horrible. And if only Harry Hole had read the marketing, maybe he would have figured out the mystery when I figured it out. But I thought the outdoor campaign for this movie was just atrocious.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't put two and two. It almost, because it looked like the paper, and without looking at it too deeply, it looked almost like a kid movie.
Yeah, and you can't look at it too deeply because you're driving down either a freeway or a road. Who's going to take the time to read that? Yeah. Unless you're stuck in traffic, which maybe they're hoping for. But it took me at least three passes before I figured out it was a movie ad. And then I read it, and I'm like going, that's just bad. It's just bad outdoor marketing for that. Especially when you have Michael Fassbender, Rebecca Ferguson, J.K. Simmons. If recognizable people. Maybe it was in their contract that they couldn't use their likeness. I don't know.
Yeah, we could only speculate. I mean, so as far as results go, they were estimating as early as about $10 million initially, but then based off of Thursday, they lowered it down to $4 million, and lo and behold, it didn't even quite make that. Came in eighth with $3.2 billion.
Yeah, million. No B. There's going to be no B in front of this movie. Yeah, you know, production budget around $35 million. Universal probably kicked in another 30, 40. So we're talking all in probably around 70. I'm guesstimating 70 to 75 million all in. You know, it's just not good when your movie comes in at number eight. Now, here's another only 1,800 locations. That is, in today's world, by no stretch, a real wide release. I mean, it's wide, but when you're comparing it to movies, you know, like say Justice League will go out. You know, we're talking 2,000 locations, 3,000-4,000 locations. This is a smaller release. What I did find very interesting is that as of the 26th, 4.5 million all in thus far, but foreign territories amounts for almost 81% of the worldwide gross. 19 million thus far. 19 million in foreign territories. So it has a worldwide gross of 23.9. Let's just call it 24. But is it going to recoup even with foreign money? No.
I doubt it.
No. And when you're looking at, when you're also looking at a movie that just, number one, it gets a really miserable Rotten Tomatoes score of 8%.
Yeah, it's not the cinema score is not as bad as Mother, but it's pretty low. It's only a D.
Yeah, it's not an F, but yeah. A D doesn't stand for Dandy or Dimitri in this case. It just stands for it stinks. An 8%, it's a D. You know, it's a precipitous drop in its second week, and people don't even know that it's out at this point. You know, when you have, you know, you have Jigsaw coming out, you know, Madea is Madea, and always does what Madea is going to do. But then you have other movies. You have Thor opening up next week.
You have Bad Moms Christmas. So that's going to
next week. Yeah. Now, see, that's a funny trailer. And I'm going to go on basis of the first movie, which to me was a pleasant surprise in comedy, I'm going to go to Bad Moms Christmas could be funny. Thor, now we're coming into the holiday season. Movie was a dump. I mean, they really, when you talk about promotion too, I didn't see Michael Fassbender anywhere. And from what I understand, he got married. And yeah, he's like, yeah, getting married, guys. Good luck. I didn't see Rebecca Ferguson anywhere. I didn't see anybody, really.
Yeah, just
on talk shows. So it was almost like Universal knew what they had. And sadly, if they knew what they had, they could have given it good TLC. And they could have released this movie in, say, a February or something. And they could have had a good thriller on their hands. Not a movie that gets 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Suburbicon also comes out this weekend.
Right.
So I'm actually looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to, you know, this is the first Saw movie that I haven't worked on. Like, I, like, wasn't a part of, in a sense. So, the trailer for that movie looks surprisingly good. So I want to see that, and I do want to see Suburbicon. But an 8% Rotten Tomatoes, Cinema Score D. You mentioned Mother. The Rotten Tomatoes score for Mother was much higher than 8%. Because what was it, in the 80s? Something. It was much higher.
Yeah, well, that was insane. Disparity. That was such an insane movie on so many levels. All right. Well, they've left it open for a sequel. I doubt they're going to have one.
No.
So.
No, and it's interesting, too, because they are, again, going back to Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, they're not continuing that story arc. They're not continuing that trilogy, but they are going with the non-Stieg Larsson book that came out a few years ago, which right now the name of it escapes me. So they're not doing the remaining two in the Stieg Larsson trilogy, the Millennium series, as they call it, but they are doing the fourth one that wasn't written by Stieg Larsson. And I think they're going with a whole new cast.
No.
To try to, in a sense, I guess, reboot that franchise again. All I can say is those people will look at the snowman and try to do the exact opposite.
There you go.
That's all I can say.
All right. Well, that about does it for us here for this movie. Next week we will be doing Suburbicon. I'm looking forward to that. One of the things we're going to, you know, we used to do two anatomies a week. We're going to do something, or at least we're going to start to do it. We're going to try to do it where we do kind of quick reviews. So we're not going to do an in-depth thing, but we'll try to do Jigsaw. I'm curious for those of you at home. Thank you for your service. I'm very curious about that movie, and I love your opinion on it. I trust your opinion, so... it's a movie I'm interested in seeing, but due time-wise, I'd rather prefer from you guys if it's worth seeing.
The you know, the reviews on that one are not horrible either. They're mid-range. I think last check, if I'm wrong, they were around 77%. A double check, but listen, Miles Teller is a very talented actor. You know, I like to watch almost anything that he's in. It's just, for me, it's sort of kind of hard watching. Again, like you said with Geostorm, to me these movies sort of have this same feel. You know, it's heavily in the news.
At least this one, like Geostorm, is all about geostorms. I think that one's just too, like, almost like a parody. Versus this, I think it does a little bit with some TLC.
Yeah, but we have those four soldiers. That you know, for me,
I get it.
You know, I mean, it's hard because we're living that, you know, we see it now daily. For me, I just wish that, you know, movies today should be really entertaining. I don't mind the, you know, I get the whole downer movie, but we see downer stuff in the news. Like, it's just a cycle that we're in. But movies, like, I want to come out of a movie feeling good. And I'm not saying that Thank You for Your Service, which I wasn't far off at 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a good score for a very small, you know, for a small movie. And I think it would be a very powerful, good movie. It'll be interesting to see how it does against Suburbicon and Jigsaw. But, you know, the New York Times had an amazing piece about horror movies and how this has been the year of horror. And it's actually, this year has delivered us, our horror fans, some good horror movies. Was Jigsaw going to be good or bad? I don't know until I see it. But, you know, who knows? We're right on the cusp. Halloween is this weekend. We're going into Halloween. There's no better time to watch horror movies than on Halloween.
There you go. So, all right. Thank you, fans, as always. We appreciate you. Let us know your thoughts and opinions on this movie. If you did like it, let us know. You know, I'd be curious as to why. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I want to know what it is that I missed. Oh, actually, too, if you are watching and you've read the books.
Yes, indeed.
What are your thoughts on the What are your thoughts on the books?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we'd also get international fans. So if for some reason you're from the Scandinavia region, you know, does it portray your region properly?
Yeah.
I'd be curious to know that as well. Like I said, we're going to do Suburbicon next week. So watch that if you want to follow along with us. Feel free to dive back into our archives for various movies that we've covered in the past. Spider-Man Homecoming actually came out, so definitely check, meaning on DVD, so definitely check out our review of that.
So did Annabelle.
Yes, indeed.
Just came out on Blu-ray as so, well.
Lots of good stuff in the archives.
Absolutely.
So definitely check it out. On behalf of Dimitri Panos at DMovies 1701.
Thank you. It's good to see you, Phil. Oh, we missed Marissa today.
You know, it's Halloween week. She doesn't like horror.
This is horrible.
I'm at Phil Svitek, or go to my website, get all the social media there. Thank you guys as always. We'll see you guys next time for another Anatomy of a Movie.
Bye all.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. Herein are those of the host only, not necessarily reflect the views back of the owners or principals.